This episode is basically gathering different community organizers and community educators to talk about projects such as trans youth, to talk about collaboration and education for gender affirmative practices or creating spaces. My name is Finn. I go by they, them. I am a community organizer, artist, and a learning podcast producer for Trans Youth Restoring the Circle. I have not done too much work within these types of projects, but I feel just really great to have had the opportunity to practice and engage and share, and also to be able to be a part of the planning and community organizing aspect of this has been really unique. And I think that's what I want to place a big value on for this episode, is just to look at all the different considerations and steps within this type of work. I really value the reflections I've been able to take out of this project and to be able to look at all of the different processes put towards it. And I'm looking forward to basically being able to hear more about different forms of teaching, sharing, community building, building of trust in relationships or spaces. And yeah, that's what I will put in to start.
That's wonderful. Thanks, Finn. And this is Julie James, and I am a white cisgendered assistant professor. And I, you know, been trying to, I guess, over the years, support youth-led work in various capacities, and in particular, trying to figure out that role or how to support that work as an academic and accessing resources for projects that youth have identified need to take place. And so I'm learning. And what I'm sort of really excited about this episode and interested in hearing about is how to do that work well, right? So reflecting on the work that we did engage in with Restoring the Circle and what happened there and the things that were really positive and the things that could be shifted and changed and being honest about that. And then I'm really excited to learn from the folks that are on here about how they do that work and what's really important for them. So we're talking about, you know, the conference in a way is an example of that kind of work and process, but also more broadly what's going on with how support for trans, two-spirit and gender diverse youth-led work unfolds, especially as you come at it from different locations, both as cisgendered or white or racialized or trans or gender diverse humans. So I'm really interested to learn and hear about those things. So Finn has asked me to facilitate the conversation. So I'm happy to do that. So on the call, on the podcast, we have Joel, Kara, Caden, Finn, and myself. So I'm going to just go around and maybe, Caden, if you want to introduce yourself and talk a little bit about, you know, the roles that you've played in relation to supporting trans, two-spirit, and gender-diverse youth-led work.
Yeah, sounds good. So my name is Caden Seaburn, and I use they or he pronouns. I'm a Bachelor of Social Work student at Carleton University in Ottawa on unceded Algonquin territory. And I've done this kind of work in a lot of different capacities over a few years. So I've been involved with Restoring the Circle kind of since the beginning, like a year and a half or 2 years ago. And I also run a by and for trans youth group in Ottawa with a group of other young trans, gender diverse folks. We run drop-in events for other young trans folks, kids and youth and families, and also do advocacy work, particularly around access to gender-affirming healthcare for trans kids and youth. And then I also work in schools doing education for staff and also meeting with groups of LGBTQ plus or trans, gender diverse students and trying to kind of bridge that gap in communication and finding out from young people about what's actually going on in their schools, what things they actually need, and then being able to bring that into conversations with staff and hopefully policy change as well. So those are kind of my big projects right now, and I've been involved with a few other things over the years, but yeah.
And Caden is also guest lectured for several of my classes, 4 times we said, right, Caden?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, which is pretty kind of cool. Thanks, Caden. Kara, can you introduce yourself and, you know, the roles that you've played or with this type of work?
Yeah, so my name is Cara Tierney. I use they, them pronouns. I'm white, non-binary, live in also the Ottawa area, traditional unceded land of Algonquin people. I am primarily an artist, and I'm also a PhD student and a part-time prof in history and theory of art and visual art at the University of Ottawa. As a PhD student, my work focuses on understanding the way art creates pedagogical instances for understanding gender diversity, gender nonconformity, and queerness. I worked quite peripherally on this very specific project, but have past experiences working with an artist researcher in similar situations where sort of a university is structuring research and experiences for queer and trans youth. So yeah, I work in a real variety of capacities, but always sort of using art as the capacitor for conversation and education.
Amazing. Thank you, Cara. Such impressive people. And Joel, can you introduce yourself and talk about the roles you've played in relation to this work?
Sure. Thanks, Julie. My name's Joel Baum, and I'm a white cisgender person using he, him pronouns and a settler on unceded Ohlone territory here in California in the East Bay area. And I come to this work from a lot of different places. Professionally, my background has been primarily in education. And so particularly with this project, really speaking a lot to the ways in which schools can, or unfortunately sometimes don't, support the unique gender of all young people, but also specifically the very particular needs of transgender and non-binary young people. I also come to this work as a father. I'm the father of two daughters, and in my own life have a number of young people who are living truly affirmed lives in their authentic genders and being able to watch that take place, both, you know, very, very close people in my life, as well as a number of the colleagues I've worked with, the power of that, and also the incredible, of course, loss when that doesn't take place, and when individuals are not allowed to do that in the institutions in which they find themselves. So just feel really, really privileged to have been part of this project and to have partnered with, you know, folks on the podcast, as well as other young folks, and sort of thinking back a year ago, how much that work together really did impact me as I've thought about how we locate ourselves and how we locate the young people that we're trying to support in this work. So again, just really very, feel very privileged to be part of today's conversation. Thank you.
Oh, thanks, Joel. That's wonderful. I know that's how I feel, very privileged to be part of this work. And I am taking note that a number of us on this call do hold at least white privilege. And I'm just mindful of that aspect. So really lovely to have you all here. So going through this, and you've actually, some of you started to touch on this a little bit, but I was wondering how you all came, you know, if you can reflect on how you came to be a part of Restoring the Circle, or how you came to be part of doing the work of supporting trans, two-spirited, or gender diverse youth-led work more broadly, and, you know, talking about maybe some of the inspirations for that type of work, influences, or possible connections. So I don't know who wants to start, but I might call on Finn or Caden first.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Finn, yes.
Okay. In a lot of ways, I initially came to this project through eagerness to create meaning for myself and for others. It was a sense of eagerness, but also a sense of being influenced and inspired by peers or by mentors or by just the things that I wanted to know more about. I think that when I initially came to this project, I was thinking a lot of how I could further utilize my own capacities and my own lived experiences or my own insights. These processes have allowed me to look and think at how to hold safe and affirmative spaces or conversations or teaching, to think more deeply about things such as how to share lived experiences or how to work with youth or have youth lead or like, yeah, I think that this has been a good opportunity for me to kind of get into the that start of practicing and being able to reflect and share and connect with others.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I want to come back to one of the things that you mentioned there that I thought was really important around how to hold safe or safer spaces within these contexts. So I'm going to come back to that in a minute. But I'm going to go to Kaden and ask Kaden about your inspirations for this work. And you can talk about Restoring the Circle specifically if you want, or other projects, or more generally. But Kaden, what are some of your inspirations and maybe goals as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I first got involved in doing not Restoring the Circle specifically, but this sort of kind of working with other young transgender diverse folks and doing that kind of advocacy and education work like 5 years ago or so when I was in high school. And in the beginning, it was mostly just because I was frustrated by things and decided to change them or try. And I think through that process, I was really lucky to meet a lot of other transgender diverse folks. And Finn and I have talked about this a lot, but particularly being able to meet trans adults who were older than me and had experience doing that kind of work and doing that advocacy work or education, and like really just having the opportunity to kind of follow them around and have those conversations and see the way that they approach that work. People like Kara and people like other folks who we've had the opportunity to work with and just kind of be friends with in Ottawa. And that's really shaped the way that I approach this work and taught me a lot of kind of the skills and strategies that I use to do that kind of advocacy and education work. And that's also how I got involved with Restoring the Circle and a lot of the other work that I do. Julie and I first met, I think like 3 years ago, when you were in Ottawa working on another project, and I was just kind of like helping out. There is a collective of trans folks in Ottawa doing work around access to healthcare for transgender diverse folks. And I would just kind of show up whenever I could and help out with things. And so I was there for the event to help like set up tables and get things ready and just kind of see what was going on, and happened to meet Julie and get connected. And that's kind of how I ended up getting involved in the project in the beginning.
Yeah. You know what, Kaden? I think that was 2014.
It's been a while.
Yes. Thank you for that, Kaden. So Kara, I'm going to go to you and ask you about involvement in this particular project, but the work in general, and specifically, if you could talk also about how you do approach this work, because Kaden just touched on that and learning from yourself and folks like you, and also how you can create or hold safer spaces in this context. Throwing a lot at you, Kara. I apologize.
That's okay. I think I'll just start by, giving like a little bit of my background to explain, I guess, how I came to this work. As a trans non-binary person who was, you know, raised in an overwhelmingly cis-normative environment, I didn't have any role models and really learned about myself in isolation with books. You know, the one thing I did have was education and access to libraries. And so that's where I found all the ideas. That's where I found all of my elders, my mentors, my inspiration. So in many ways, I never had a queer adolescence. And that's something that I don't like actively mourn, but if people of my generation, we didn't have community. We didn't really have those connections because, you know, we're largely born into straight families. Finding those connections. I have these like intense memories of like wandering around and seeing queerness, visible queerness in other folks and other adults who like I would just yearn to just sit with them. They'd be strangers out in the public, you know? And so a lot of the work that I do is about trying to create those spaces or create those openings where we can have those intergenerational relationships. Because I find a lot of the way our society is structured is you're sort of shuffled through life with people of a similar age as you. So you don't necessarily have those access points to meeting older people who may have had similar experiences. So, you know, when I do come to this work, in many ways, I'm as much a learner as I am a teacher because I don't have the experience of having been a queer youth. And so when I do work with queer youth, I'm learning as much from them. And it's funny to be a prof now in a university classroom, like clockwork at the beginning of every semester, I have my queer and trans students run up to me during the break of the first class saying like, wow, we have a trans elder. And I don't consider myself an elder. I don't consider myself old, but all of a sudden I found myself in this position where I'm that person that I as a youth yearned for to be in my life. So In many ways, it's really healing for me to be able to try and create those spaces that I didn't have, and that I really would have benefited from and would have, you know, it took me a long time to sort of figure myself out and fall on my feet in a way where I felt confident and stable emotionally, financially. So yeah, it's about, you know, taking the opportunity to be the professor at the front of the classroom and to be unapologetically queer and trans and vocal and visible. And yeah, so that's really how I come to that work and the driving impetus behind it. It's as much about survival as it is about lifestyle or just paying my bills. It really is. It's been a real honor to know people like Caden and like Finn and to be able to call them my friends. And I don't actually feel a significant age gap when we spend time together, because those things, I don't know, they seem to evaporate because I'm learning so much from them when we are together. That's how I come into this sort of area of work. And my art practice is very self-reflective, always sort of turning the lens on my own experience to try and find the spaces where there were barriers, there were obstacles, there were challenges, and use that as ways to, again, create access points that aren't always me, that can be like an artwork that goes out into the world and creates that experience for someone else, hopefully, always hopefully. So I think that answers part of your question.
Yeah, it does.
And so Caden brought me into this very specific project initially. And this is how I met you, Julie. And I was involved in sort of preliminary conversations. And when it was, you know, clear that this was about trans youth, I pulled back a little and then, you know, I said, I'm here. Here's my what I have to offer. Here's, you know, how I'm ready to engage with this project. But, you know, the concern primarily was that the youth be given all of those opportunities. So, you know, as somebody who works in a university, who does have access to a fair amount of cultural capital that I can mobilize and create opportunities for others, I'm pretty sensitive about not occupying space where, you know, the focus should really be on trying to foster the upcoming generation and empower youth and queer and trans youth specifically, because they're starting off from a disadvantaged position. So trying to always throw back and turn whatever resources I have over to create sort of sustainable frameworks of engagement. And to me, it really is about the sustainability. You know, I think a lot of university research projects are structured in ways that objectify the research subject and don't take into consideration the after. Okay, but what about after your study? what has happened for your research subject? What have they taken away from this? Because, you know, universities are good at mining communities for information, but then how is that research then turned in on itself and turned over in a way to strengthen the subject that it's trying to engage with in the first place?
Yeah, agreed. On so many points there, Cara. So many points.
For me, when I was working with you, Joel, and we were leading this workshop and planning towards it, I think what became really significant was that we didn't feel like it was just very open. And I think that we were able to have a really open discussion because we were open with each other. And so that kind of like integrated into the workshop in itself.
If I might, Julia, pick up from there. You know, I so appreciate that reflection, Finn. And I'm sitting here smiling and nodding as I think about the work together and what did feel like, you know, for me, it is such a gift to be invited into the space to begin with. And also, though, the experience of, you know, being the adult and, you know, the older person in the room and sort of the educator who'd done a lot of professional development and sort of coming into that space with like, here's my thinking, but also, you know, feeling a level of respect, but also respect for the two of you to say, yeah, that's one way we might do it. And here's a different way that we might think about it. And just what a, I don't know, what a powerful moment that was for me to be able to just like, right, say, right, of course, like there's many, many different ways. So, you know, as I said at the beginning, I've really reflected a lot on that process together and have just really, really appreciated how it's opened my mind in general to coming into the various spaces I enter in my professional role. I should say my professional capacity is I'm a, you know, senior director for professional development with an organization called Gender Spectrum. And in that role, my primary function is to build the capacity of other people to account for gender in the work they do. And I often challenge them to enter those spaces from a more constructivist place, from a place of curiosity and wonder. And I just remember our time together and working on the project very much reminded me to enter spaces with that same level of curiosity and wonder. So yeah, I really appreciate that. And I'll add, Finn, I've really also just treasured the way in which you've continued to reflect. And I know you've shared several pieces with me, and I'm guessing maybe others in the group, about your own development. And again, what a gift that's been, just to be able to listen in, if you will, on your own thinking and reflection, and to see someone doing that without a sense of, and I have to get to this point by then, I must do it by this, you know, it's like the process is so critical.
Mm-hmm. When I was listening to the youth panel and then leading to your own discussion, I think what really helped me to make these kind of reflections in terms of how we've connected was how you reminded the audience and the service providers and the guests coming to listen to the young people speak on the panel that they had to just be mindful and take off the cap of expertise. You know, I think, you know, Caden and I have talked about this too in the past. It's like when you are younger and like you're trying to learn about things, sometimes it's nice to have guidance and support. But at the same time, it's so nice to learn through experiences. Giving that space for learning and like seeing that learning and sharing of knowledge comes in so many different ways, but being able to work with differences is, you know, it's been really great. As a group, we've helped this project really unfold in a lot of ways that it has. And yeah.
Thank you both for that. I have a couple of thoughts in reflection to what Kara was saying and then what Finn and Joel were just talking about. But one of the things that popped in my head was, you know, when we started these conversations way back, and this is very close to like when I got this new role and I, you know, switched from like direct practice to being an academic, which I'm not very comfortable with necessarily, and trying to figure out how I can do this in ways that are actually meaningful. And Kara talking about how do we do research that doesn't just serve the researcher or exploit those research, but getting back to things. And so trying to figure that out. And we like had these conversations with all sorts of young people with all sorts of gender identities that are diverse across Canada and different racialized identities. Anyways, the thing that came really resoundingly through at that time was that youth voice needed to be centered and heard and had been left out. There needs to be paid labor. We need to invert the hierarchies. These are all beautiful things. And then it was really strongly about wanting that sense of community and connection and how important that was and is amongst each other, and wanting to, as Kara, you were just talking about how you didn't have that, right? And you had to build that for yourself. And you're like, okay, I want to then move this forward and then build that for someone else. And what I saw with the young people I got to connect with was they've had some element of it, maybe, or someone like you involved, and then they want to build it further for you, you know, for young people their own age and those even younger. And that mentorship, you know, translates down, which I thought was really wonderful and lovely. And then the other thing that I think about and I feel like I have to mention is just that we had this really beautiful vision going forward about how to shift things and how to make things sort of different. And I keep coming back to how due to my family's health, I had to take time right at when the conference was happening. Things had to switch and I had to take a significant time off from this project. And I think that that left some pieces that should have been there, like consistency and support and recognition of different things, off. And I'm really happy to come back into it and have these reflective conversations, but also to now see things being produced and then disseminated back into the community, because I feel this immense responsibility to give that back. So I'm very, very grateful and happy for those things. Sorry, that was a lot for me. I wanted to then maybe go into asking each of you, in creating this work and creating these dynamics or creating these spaces, are there elements that you think are really important in creating a safe, open space? And then maybe I'll ask Kaden, just because I haven't heard from Kaden in just a little bit. Are there elements in creating these spaces where it's young people and those who would support them that are involved?
Yeah, I think the thing that I've been thinking about the most and that comes to mind for me is finding a balance of ways to support folks in kind of learning new things and finding ways to do this work, depending on the level of kind of experience or like exposure that we've had to doing this work in the past, and also respecting the knowledge and expertise and experience that people already have. And I've been thinking about this a lot lately, that I find that often in community spaces and community organizing, there can feel like this kind of level of tokenization, where when I am doing education or training or community organizing where I'm brought into spaces, so often it feels like the kind of my main qualification for being there is the fact that I'm trans, which obviously is important, and it's important to have trans folks doing this work. But I also think that like so many of us have so much knowledge and experience beyond just kind of that one aspect of our identities that we bring into the work, and finding ways to kind of make sure that that's like understood and reflected in the work. Because I think often when I do training and I find when folks are not necessarily so responsive, particularly in like a medical context where I'm doing advocacy and trying to shift kind of medical systems to be like safer and more reflective of the needs of transgender diverse young people, there's often kind of a lack of willingness to respond to that, I feel, on the part of service providers that I'm working with. And I think often it's because, you know, I'm not a doctor, and I, you know, there's kind of this idea that they should listen to us because of our identities, but that we don't have any actual kind of knowledge, or like we're not actually qualified to kind of speak on the topic. And even like directly being told by service providers that, like, you know, they remember being angry teenagers once too, and, you know, we'll get over it eventually kind of thing, and feeling that it's very kind of like tokenizing or patronizing. And so I think in doing the work like this, the conversations that we were able to have and finding ways to make sure that the kind of knowledge and experience that people bring to the table is actually clear, and that the people who are listening and learning and attending those workshops kind of understand that we actually do have like knowledge and expertise that they might not have. You know, even though I'm not a doctor, I do have knowledge about people's experiences in these contexts, and knowledge that I can bring to the table, even talking with doctors, that they don't necessarily know everything, and that they do need to listen beyond just that surface level of our identities.
And so what I'm hearing is that aspect of moving outside that expertise role, open-mindedness. Also, just I'm thinking like that you have lived experience, and then you are also privy to ongoing and often conversations that a lot of doctors aren't, right? And that knowledge is really all very important. Thanks, Kaden. And Joel, I know I'm just realizing that I skipped over both what were your inspirations for this work, and maybe I'll ask you two questions. What were your inspirations for this work and beforehand, and then maybe going forward? And you know, what do you think about in trying to create safer spaces in these contexts?
Yeah, thanks, Julie. And I would say that those two are really related. So, you know, I come to my current role at Gender Spectrum from the world of education, first as a science teacher and then as a school leader in the States. We have school districts, and so I was a district leader and at the city kind of level, and then working at the university level with future educational leaders. But going all the way back to those days as a teacher, it comes down to what do you want, you know, the people you're working with to know and be able to do as a result of their interaction with you. And, you know, I would say how I come into this particular area of work, I've always, since I was very, very young, had sort of a belief in social justice. And I happen to be Jewish, and there's a whole belief system called tikkun olam, which means a kind of a responsibility for healing the world. My mom survived the Holocaust, and so I have a very kind of felt experience of what happens when power is exerted in a really destructive way. And I don't know, I've sort of had this social justice feel for a long time. and commitment. And then at just the right time, as often happens, in my own world, you know, there were various young people that I was very close with navigating gender stuff. At the same time, someone asked me to maybe begin getting involved with gender spectrum. And so that's how my work really turned from the educational focus primarily on issues of race and linguistic diversity here in the California Bay Area to issues related to gender. And as a teacher, you know, in terms of creating these safe spaces and spaces for learning, and what I really, again, appreciated with RJ and with Finn was from very early on, you know, we said, well, what do we want to have happen like in this session? You know, what are our objectives, right? But we also talked very openly about those objectives, not just being sort of tangible knowledge, you know, and skills, but also an experience, right? What the actual pathway towards whatever quote unquote outcomes there would be in new knowledge, the experience itself was going to be really, really critical. And I think RJ in particular was really pushing us to think about like, okay, if we want these things to happen, there are a lot of ways we can get there and some will bring certain levels of experience as well. And so I guess to answer your question, what I think is really critical in creating these spaces is a shared understanding of terminology, of language to circle back on assumptions that might be getting made, which is often so much the case when it comes to gender as well, right? Which is, you know, often when people talk about somebody's sex, they automatically are like, are we talking about the same thing or not? If someone talks about gender identity or even uses a term like transgender, are we talking about the same thing or not? And maybe we better, you know, measure twice and cut once. Let's double check that we are on the same page. And in that sort of slowing down and coming to shared understandings, we're actually doing the work itself, as well as creating a space that allows us to be able to be more open and vulnerable with each other. And I just, I keep getting chills about last year with like somehow that magically seemed to happen with RJ and Finn and myself as we thought about this. At least for me, I felt so like it was just very liberating to be in that space thinking and talking together. I'm not quite sure why, but there was something in the air, something that allowed us to have this, what felt to me, again, from my very kind of privileged place, a very organic partnership and collaboration all over a relatively short period of time.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad that happened.
Yeah, I really agree.
Wonderful. Thank you. Yeah, and I'm very glad that that openness and that relationship and the themes of being both the learner and teacher in various ways and contexts is really coming through all of you here, all of us, it seems, right? So then I want to ask Kara about creating these sort of safer spaces in the context of doing work that supports trans, two-spirit, and or gender diverse young people. And then I want to layer in within that and open this up to all of you, how to do that work in the context of trying to center voices of those who are racialized, Indigenous, and or disabled. Kara, that's a big one, but I'm going to throw it over to you.
And I don't think I have a short, concise answer for it, but I think I approach that work the same way I approach all my work, which is, you know, when you're meeting with any group of people is sort of taking stock, right? So understanding place and relationships that exist within that community of interest in that space and in that time, and recognizing the structures that make it possible for us all to be there in the first place, the structures of privilege, the barriers that need to be overcome to get there, the absence, the people who are not in the room and why they're not in the room. Caden was saying some stuff that really created a lot of reflection in terms of the work that I do. I'm currently working with medical students, so they don't have the confidence of the experts that Caden has been dealing with necessarily. And there is like a real openness and willingness to engage, but we're also always entering these spaces as trans people, sort of doing that work of advocacy. We are negotiating the tokenism of being brought in to educate on something. And we're often coming into conflict with groups, even within our own community, of people who have been raised in a culture that has historically pathologized any gender that falls outside of the binary construct. So my approach is always to lead with questions, to sit in silence, and to really honor discomfort You know, I think creating a space where people are, first of all, not scared to be there. And if they are scared to be there, to stop and reflect and question what that fear is and where that comes from. But also, you know, setting the framework by saying, if you are scared to say something, then maybe you need to say it so we can figure it out. Because people often censor themselves to a point that growth isn't given the chance that it needs, particularly with this type of work. If you are sort of sitting in silence and scared of the things that you're thinking, we're not really getting to the roots of maybe the things that we need to be addressing. So I'll often open any sort of space that I'm hosting or collaborating in by suggesting that we, you know, those are the pieces that we actually really need to go after and to think about the points of discomfort. As humans, I think we're compelled to always move ourselves towards comfort. If we can isolate that thing that is uncomfortable, and then we can trace the path of how we move from there to comfort, then that process is going to be really enlightening, I think, on how we can address larger structural problems. And then just the process of asking questions. Oftentimes it involves sort of flipping the expectations of the group. I think we live in a really declarative society. People are good at making statements, but are maybe not as good at the work of reflection that is so necessary to mobilizing the kinds of change that we're addressing here. Rather than respond to people's anticipation or expectation that they're here to be given something, inviting them to come in and do the work necessary for them to find what they need in order to get to where they need to go. I don't know if I feel like I'm saying a lot of nothing.
I think you're saying a lot of really important things that I keep taking notes on.
Yeah, like Kate and I'm like the hired gun who gets to go into organizations and teach them about gender. And they often all come in expecting to meet a trans person and to learn what it is like to be a trans. They're quickly dispelled of that when they realize that they're actually there to learn about themselves. And that as trans people, we have been forced to think about gender in ways that cis people haven't, right? So it's often about creating the space that invites cis people into that process of questioning of their own identity, which in my experience has been nothing but wholly transformative for those people who have never been given the opportunity to sit and stop and think about their identities the way that trans people have been forced into for survival. And the other point I wanted to make in response to something Caden said was, you know, the mistrust that you encounter when you're working with the experts, quote unquote, it's not just aimed at gender, but it's also at youth, you know, and this is one of the other major things we need to be aware of when we're working with youth is that youth are incredibly brilliant and so clever, but are constantly not trusted because they aren't seen to have had the experience that, you know, a well-decorated expert might have, but that shouldn't undermine the very real experience and intellect and value that they do bring to the table. So I just wanted to point that out, Caden, that you've got your youthful charm working against you in a lot of those situations, but actually it's a power as well.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting thing, and especially like in the past year, I've been doing a lot more work in schools in addition to working with like doctors and kind of medical folks. And I kind of joke about it with people, but I'm very intentional, especially when I'm going into schools and doing staff training. I have like specific shirts that I'll wear that make me look a little bit more like an adult or like, you know, like a teacher, because I'm always, you know, the youngest person in the room and I'm not a teacher. But at the same time, I think there's sometimes this sort of dynamic that gets set up where depending on who's introducing me or what kind of context I'm in, they're like, oh, it's really important to listen to this person because they're like a young trans person and kind of getting put in the position of like, this person like represents like one of your students or one of your patients and is going to tell you about what that experience is like. And that's actually not necessarily the case. You know, I have an experience of being a young trans person and there might be some of their patients or some of their students who have a similar experience. Although at the same time, you know, as like a white trans masculine person with a lot of privilege in a lot of areas and a lot of like kind of social capital and support, I really don't represent those experiences. And even if I did, that's not really like, you know, I'm not there to kind of tell them like the story of my life or my experience accessing healthcare or in schools. That definitely informs some of the work that I do. But I think I've also like probably read and analyzed more literature about trans youth and healthcare than a lot of those doctors have, and they don't necessarily know that or kind of expect that. And so I think there's a lot of other things beyond just my own lived experience that go into that work, and that I think are often overlooked because there's so much emphasis on the fact that I have lived experience and that that's what they should be looking for. And so I think people sometimes the feedback that I get from trainings is like, oh, this was really good, but we'd love to hear more about, you know, what was coming out to your parents like, which, you know, that's like a story that I could tell, but it's really not very exciting and not necessarily very helpful. And I think kind of misses the point of why it is that it makes sense for me to be doing that work.
Yeah.
Thank you both for that. Amazing. And I'm mindful that we're going to lose Joel in just a little bit and wrapping things around a little bit. But one of the things that I keep on hearing is talking about this process of learning and unlearning for everybody, right? That sort of needs to take place in these contexts in various ways, right? And Kara, when you were talking, the things that I was thinking about is how many professionals talk about it being really hard to being vulnerable and saying that you don't know, right? And opening yourself up to learning. So it's like an unlearning. So both in a professional context, but in a personal identity context. And I was just sort of wondering if the thing that Joel and RJ and Finn maybe got to, maybe that was a process of understanding all of that, that the whole space is about learning and unlearning for everybody present in various ways, right? In various capacities, and just allowing that to happen. And maybe in that context, then actual learning and movement happens. I'm not so sure. That's what I was just sort of thinking about. So then I am going to just maybe touch back to Joel before we say goodbye to Joel. And I'm going to ask you about centering the most marginalized voices in the work that you do. Maybe talking about it specifically in a context of being white and cis, I guess, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would begin by saying, you know, stay tuned, work in progress, you know, work the website under construction. I mean, you know, I continue to wrestle with that and try to be very self-reflective about the degree to which I'm doing that and know in some cases it's far more successful than others. I do, again, you know, really feel strongly that as that kind of little teacher in me comes back to creating sort of spaces that are about vulnerability and openness, it's something, you know, that in our all of our professional development, we really try to do quite intentionally. And I'm proud to say we get a lot of really great feedback that we really emphasize you don't need to be the expert. Let go of that. And I think and Kate, I'm interested to hear your perspective as well, like working in schools in particular, where the educators are so used to being the ones in power with the answers, you know, kind of with holding all the knowledge and responsible for so many cases dispensing it, that if they're able to get there, it's really liberating for them as well to let go of occupying that space. And so sadly, sometimes I feel like centering unheard or underheard marginalized voices, you sometimes have to appeal to people's raw self-interest kind of by saying, look, you will get something out of it. It will be very liberating for you. And if we can sort of scaffold the experience of that sort of letting go first of their own expertise, then they're able to allow in the expertise of others, and hopefully without attaching value to age or race or gender or heritage, immigration status, etc. And so, I don't know, I feel like it continually loops back to creating spaces where people can be okay with not knowing and becoming enlivened by that curiosity and wonder. Sometimes I refer to it as taking an inquiry stance. And just sort of stepping back and saying, huh, I wonder if, or that's one way to think about it, what might be some others? And so often, right, again, with gender, we're not saying don't pay attention to gender, get rid of gender, or gender is not a real thing. It's so much more than that. In fact, it's like go much deeper, think much more deeply about it. And then also, of course, letting go of the, well, it's a this or it's that, right? If I'm the teacher, I must be in control. And the minute I give up control, I'm no longer a teacher. So again, getting people to recognize these false binaries that we, many of us have been socialized into, and particularly in a Western culture, are not serving us well, nor representative of a whole lot of reality in any case. So I don't know if I got anywhere close, Julie, there.
No, that's, it's, you're where you're at, right? And those are the reflections, and that's the response to what I'm probing to. And I think that just speaks to talking through these processes in a way that we are and are at in real ways. And, you know, I think you touched on things that I always think about around coming from the layers of privilege that I have and moving between the space of listener and supporter, having presence and then moving back, and then, you know, being uncomfortable, as Caro sort of touched on. And I actually kind of always want to feel that sense of discomfort and alertness, right? And so it's kind of those things. And the other thing I was thinking about too is how the layers of professionalization and the layers of social identities that have hold privilege, how they block learning and how they reaffirm or take away this sort of idea to be vulnerable and say you don't, and open these things up and self-reflect back to you and how you're implicated. Because that expert role is like this gaze outwards instead of the gaze inward and how you're complacent in these things. So I was going to go to Caden, though, and I wanted to ask Caden, and then I think we'll maybe wrap things up. When you do come into spaces, you know, you talked about being white and non-binary and having different levels of privilege. How do you work with that in relation to the young people that you're working alongside and with? Like, what are some of the thoughts that you have?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what Joel was saying resonated a lot with the approach that I take in schools as well, because I think I, you know, often when I'm doing staff training or when I'm working with students, I'm kind of, I feel in this sort of weird position in schools where I'm brought in some context as kind of like the expert who's going to answer all the questions and have all the answers. And then at the same time, sort of also not necessarily given that respect as an expert because I'm young and I look very young. And I think there's this feeling often with staff that it's kind of like, you know, story time, or that they don't necessarily see the experience that I have or the knowledge that I have to share. And I try to kind of find a space in between that, where I think what Joel was saying about encouraging folks to not feel like they have to be the experts. You know, most of the questions that I get asked are often about, you know, what if this happens? Or what if a student asks for this thing? Or what if someone wants to do this? And I'm like, well, I don't know. Have you asked the student? And that's, you know, that's my answer to at least half of the questions that I get asked, because I think that, you know, everyone's experience is so different and the things that people need are so different. And I don't know, like, just because I'm trans doesn't mean that I know what this particular student needs or wants, or, you know, there's some kind of like general guidance and best practices and like advice that I can give to people. But at the end of the day, everyone's experience is different. And I think it's important for people to be flexible in terms of the spaces that they're creating. But I also don't want to fall into that same trap of assuming that because I'm trans, therefore I get to be the expert instead of those teachers, because I really don't know either. And I really value the opportunities that I get to meet with students in schools as well and hear from them directly about what's going on in their school, because the context in every school is different. The things that those students are talking about and thinking about and needing are different. And so I try to really like just reflect that back. And even when I'm meeting with staff to say, you know, here is what students have told me they want in this school, or here's what I'm hearing from them about how things are going. And so I think trying to use my position to bridge that gap of communication rather than to kind of impose my idea of expertise, because I think especially as someone who has so much privilege and that my experience is not reflective of the experiences of all of the other students in those schools or all the other trans folks that people might be working with. And to kind of encourage people to be open to lots of different answers to their questions or lots of different approaches to supporting people that meet their needs rather than some kind of imaginary like trans archetype of what people need.
Awesome. Thank you, Caden.
Again, I'm unfortunately gonna need to step away.
Any closing remarks or final thoughts, Joel, before you leave?
Well, just again, you know, this appreciation. I laughed when Kate said, well, have you asked them? You know, like, oh my God. And I'm sure that you've experienced this as well. Like, there's often this almost embarrassed giggle, like, oh, right, that makes sense, right? It's like sometimes the most obvious things are right in front of us. So, just again, Julie, I want to thank you for really helping bring me into this space and your leadership, even in the midst of a lot of challenges I know that you were facing. And just really, again, what I said at the beginning, feel so privileged and honored to have been invited into this circle. And I'm so glad to see that it's continuing to be restored. And just really, just huge appreciations.
Thanks, you, Joel. Thank Wonderful.
You. Thanks, Joel.
All right. So as we wrap up, one of the things that I guess like the big piece that I really love is that it is an ongoing process, and understanding that. And I think about the times we're in, and I know that that we don't necessarily want to focus on this, but it is the context that we're in, COVID context. And I wonder about this being a time and space where we can start thinking about shifting things or things that really need to be changed. And I'm just wondering maybe if I would go around and ask each of you first your final wrapping up thoughts about this conversation and maybe some sort of hope for a shift going forward as sort of the next thing we sort of look forward to. So I'd like to maybe start with Cara, Caden, and finish with Finn. I want to leave off with Finn's sentiments that I'm really grateful for. So maybe because we haven't heard from Cara in a little bit, but Cara, can I go to you?
Sure. So I'll start with the COVID context, and then I'll finish with maybe a question. In terms of the context and time we're in now, certainly I think it gives us a tremendous opportunity to learn, first of all, and assess. Right. And I think, you know, we're very quickly being shown some of the weak points in a lot of the structures that sustain our day-to-day rhythms and routines. What I think is most exciting coming out of this is the way we need to look to communities who regularly operate under these circumstances and the way their voices are still being marginalized. Even within this context, despite the fact that we have a lot to learn from, you know, in particular, like critical disability studies and the way accessibility is not always physically achieved or achievable under the sort of the hegemonic status quo. So personally, I think this situation is actually going to have a very strong impact on the way I engage in education, the way I foster and hold educational spaces going forward, in understanding that not everyone is a physical in the classroom learner, and that despite the way we have placed an inordinate amount of importance on bodies physically mobilizing in order to learn, that we can actually learn at a distance very effectively when we need to. Right. So I'm hoping that when we don't have to, we will still sustain a lot of the systems that hold open those access points. And then I guess I would just finish with a question, because I wasn't necessarily present for the conference, but I certainly heard a lot about the conference as it was being built, and then as it unfolded, and then sort of the after effects. I guess one thing that we didn't really touch on that I think is really important to think about is, what were those points of discomfort in sort of the unfolding of the event, right? Because I think if my understanding is correct, then there was this incredible team that was put together to deliver this conference, and then it happens like in the flash of an eyelid. And so were there moments throughout that, moments of discomfort, and what sort of prompted those, how were they dealt with, and then how moving forward would you anticipate that in order to maybe better respond to it? I don't think we can always eliminate discomfort. In fact, I think, you know, again, I think those are really pedagogically rich experiences for us. But yeah, how would you engage with it? If you had to relaunch this all over again, what would be sort of like the one takeaway that would alter the way that you would enter this process in the future?
That is a beautifully relevant and gorgeous question that I actually kind of want to answer.
Great. I'm curious about the answer.
Yeah. And I actually think it could be like something that could fuel a whole other episode. But I mean, and I think we all might have different entry points or responses, but I think that from my perspective, the ramping up and the discussions and going forward, the conversations and building were, I think I found them really exciting and really interesting and wonderful. I do recall quite a bit though that folks, because of life circumstances, would cycle in and out of being present with the conversations or being able to engage. And I understood that, right? Because I understand the stressors that those who are dealing with marginalization are under. And then, I mean, I've mentioned it before, then like that interruption in my own life. And so I think when I look back at it, there's a couple of things. One, I wish that I maybe commanded a little more of a process that pushed things a little bit further and had certain elements solidified in there and provided structure and support. I think the moment of discomfort is I don't want to intrude so much. I don't want to take over. I don't want to unintentionally invert oppression, right? Mm-hmm. In those processes. But I think my support was actually much more needed and I needed to kind of come up a little bit with that. So that was the discomfort. I think I stand back a little bit too much because of my positionality. So I've got to step in and be present and be there and be, you know, the older person that I am, right? Guiding things forward, right? And I think that's a really important thing because in that presence, in that moment of being comfortable in that more that presence, I would have maybe seen things like, you know, just hearing now that some of the young people talk about being shy or like nervous going on. And they, you know, when they did that panel, they only came across to me as these really well-spoken, confident humans, right? Or having that spotlight shine on you. So mm-hmm. I wish I had more of my active presence in that capacity so that I'd understand what the experience was like for the young people and having the spotlight and the switch flipped and also understanding what it looks like to be sitting in front of an audience of service providers that have treated you all in various ways, including oppressive ways, and being racialized and sitting in front of a largely white audience. So I missed some of those really important aspects and I would do that differently going forward. I'd be more comfortable with my presence. And I think that was really important. And the consistency and the structure in with understanding that at times young people will have to step back, right? Especially as you deal with stressors. I think that's a big one. And that's why coming back to it, I do feel this responsibility to then produce things that can move things forward and walk in a bit more of a comfortable presence and consistent presence and not feeling that I'm being necessarily intrusive, but actually being hopefully supportive and consistent. Yeah, it was a big learning process for me. And, you know, Carl, when you mentioned that magic that youth have, right? I think coming off a tough year that continues, obviously, with our current context, your sentiments really brought me back to like that joy, really, right? We just are there in ways that we need to be for young people and then let them do their thing. I'm already seeing it. That's why I started the whole conversation off. Like, have you seen the website? Have you seen the reports? Right? I'm so excited about that. It just brings the joy back to this work for me, right? And the whole reason why I even accepted this position is being able to be part of that process and broker resources and have a greater influence. So thank you for that. Thank you for that question.
Congratulations. I think there's many successes came out of this and your work. So thank you.
Yeah. All right. That was a lot for me and we were supposed to be wrapping up. There were such good thought-provoking questions. I wanted to go to Kaden next, and then if Finn, if you're okay with being the final word on things, as
sounds good. Yeah, I think going back to the context around COVID right now, I think I've been thinking about a lot of the same things as Kara, and thinking about what are the things that have now kind of suddenly quote unquote become possible or have been allowed to be possible that wouldn't have been in the past in terms of like all the work that's able to happen online that. People probably would not have created the space for, or like policies would not have allowed to happen in the past? And what are the things from that that are actually like really helpful in terms of providing greater accessibility to people? And I've been thinking a lot about like young people who are maybe like living at home and have difficulty accessing spaces, even if they're in the city, because they're maybe not out to the people that they live with or don't have the freedom to just kind of like leave whenever they want and go wherever they want. And particularly in Ottawa, at least, a lot of our like in-person resources are very centralized downtown. And so if you like live at home quite far away from downtown, that's not necessarily very accessible for people. And so kind of thinking about what things are happening right now that are things that are actually good and that we like and should be able to keep. And I think I'm hoping that there'll be continue to be that greater flexibility moving forward, where some of the things that, you know, haven't been able to happen right now around in-person like community connections will be possible again, but also that there'll be other kind of opportunities and finding ways to bring those things together. And yeah, I think Kara's question about the conference is a really good one as well. I think it's been really interesting and helpful for me, I think, particularly the conversations that I've had with Finn following the conference. And last year, I had so many different projects going on that even though I was quite engaged and like involved with the conference, it was never kind of the main focus for me, because I had so many other kind of projects going on. And I felt like it was like interesting and exciting and something that I was happy to be involved with. But it was also just kind of trying to juggle that with so many other things that I feel like I didn't give it as much of my kind of focus or attention as I wish that I had. And I learned a lot from that experience as well, being able to connect with so many other people doing similar work in different spaces and connecting with young people who are doing this work in Ottawa, but also outside of Ottawa and in other places, and finding people who are doing the same kind of work that we're doing here, which I think is often difficult. It feels kind of isolating, especially as a young person. A lot of the people who I work with tend to be older or have different experiences. I never really meet people who have kind of similar experiences with community organizing that I have. So it was really cool, I think, to meet and get to work with more people with those different backgrounds and different kind of approaches and experiences with engaging in community organizing and education, and be able to learn a lot from other people's experiences and approaches and strategies as well. So I think that was a really good learning opportunity for me at the same time as being able to do the education and work that I was doing.
Thanks, Caden. Yeah, thanks for all of that. And Finn.
Yeah. Really echoing a lot of the reflections that have been shared. The things that I've been really thinking about through this type of isolation is just how this isolation reminds me of other types of isolation. As a working group, we did have a strong sense of brainstorming and working together. A lot of the unlearning and learning and, you know, the unpacking aspect of this project, RJ brought in a lot of, I think, really valuable insights in terms of how we can create different ways of talking to each other and to people who are different or people who are like. I think that, yeah, just being able to have this conversation today kind of brings back a lot of these initial connections and initial influences. And so I think that there were different aspects of discomfort for different people in this project. And really what I might suggest for moving forward or joining this type of work, just taking time to check in with yourself, really understanding what it is, like preparing and investing are things that I wish I could go back and kind of push myself more towards. But although there was discomfort, these discomforts have kind of influenced me now to possibly do things differently or to just kind of look back on the experiences of working in this type of project, not having much experiences differently and being more patient and accepting of what I have contributed and what I have learned. And so, yeah, I think that's what I want to say.
Oh, thank you, Finn, for that. And I think that you circled back to a really important point and a connection in terms of like myself, because of my positionality. And like, I stepped back when you all were talking about that panel in particular, and it's like, do you want me present in the room? Like, no, we want to be present. And so I didn't even know what you were going to say. And I think back to that and think, oh, you know, maybe I should have come in with a little more protection, which I will do, in the, like saying, hey, you know, sharing of yourself might be something that you you know, think about these things, but sharing specific things that service providers can do and, you know, ways to push forward the conversation and necessarily tied back to personal stuff might be important. And so it brings me back to the learning that I've done. And I wanted to say to Finn that I am really, really grateful. It's the position of privilege that can hold you back from not wanting to intrude in a way that takes you out of things that you should be doing that are helpful. But I wanted to say to Finn, thank you for sticking through the discomfort and holding on and offering insight and growth and keeping the space so that we can get back to this point of understanding. It's a huge lesson for me, and I'm very grateful for it. And I wish I had been there in deeper and more meaningful ways. And then but I'm very grateful for those lessons. And thank you for your work and insight and growth and talent and this whole series, which is just really incredible. I'm very, very grateful for it. And I think this should be a moment that you should feel just so proud on so many levels. So thank you, Finn. A little like, yay, Finn. Thank you so much for all of it.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, a little standing ovation. And with that, thank you. These are the conversations we need to keep having, and I'm glad that we're having them.